Irish NFL show. Firstly, thank you for listening to the show. We truly appreciate all our listeners. If you are enjoying the show, please consider rating, reviewing, and subscribing on whichever podcast platform you are listening on. It makes a huge difference. It helps others to find the show, and we would massively appreciate it. Also, reach out to us on social media. We love interacting with listeners and with fans from wherever you are in the world. And with that said, on with today's episode.
Welcome into the Irish NFL show. We are less than 100 days away from the new NFL season, so good time to start reviewing the offseason and what all the teams have done. In this episode, we're going to be focusing on the NFC West. But before we get into that, we want to introduce our new host to the show, Conor Brophy. I was going to say welcome to the Irish NFL show, but you're a part of the team now, Conor. It's great to have you on.
Yeah, thanks very much. This is what happens when you go for a pint in O'Donoghue's. I went for a pint and next thing you know, I end up co-hosting a podcast. Now, delighted to be here, lads. Like, really excited about it. Many are called and few are chosen, as they say. I give a bit of background to my NFL fandom, if it's helpful. I won't give you the whole, my name is Conor and I like long walks on the beach spiel. But I fell into the NFL, as so many of us did, when Channel 4 started broadcasting it back in the day. So I'm immediately dating myself even by saying that. And thankfully, I fell into the bandwagon of the 85 Bears at that time. Uncle had emigrated to Chicago. My godfather, Kieran, sent me back a Chicago Bears cap. So I thought, well, I might as well start supporting the Chicago Bears then, not knowing anything. And coincidentally, the first game I watched, and I double-checked the date just to make sure I was right on this, because memory can play tricks on you. It was 13th of October, 85. I watched the Bears beat the 49ers. Bill Walsh's 49ers with Joe Montana. Back in the days when the Bears were actually capable of doing things like that. Younger fans obviously will have to look that up and confirm that the historical record is accurate. I thought, here I was on the dynasty trail. Everybody was talking about the 85 Bears taking it forward and sweeping all before them. But alas, that did not happen. And it's been 38 years and counting of hurt since. But haven't lost the love for the game, thankfully.
Colin, we have a really interesting dynamic on this show. Now, we have a Bears fan, a Giants fan, who his team is on the up, and your Broncos.
I've been burned so many times over the last few years, Brian. I'm not going to make any great proclamations about my team. I like the fact that my team have been pretty quiet on their own proclamations, but it is it's good that we have, you know, NFC representation, especially given that that is what we are going to be delving into. And as you said, it's nice that we are now into the double digits in terms of the number of days left until the regular season kicks off. The off season can be entertaining and we can have fun discussions, but there's nothing like real football.
Yeah, in this episode, as I touched on there, we're going to discuss the NFC West and an interesting division. You've got one of the teams who are in the championship game last year. You've got a team that came back off the Super Bowl with high expectations and ended up being one of the worst defending Super Bowl champions in quite some time. The Arizona Cardinals, who have gone from a team that looked like they were on the up for a long time to kind of now the team that people feel will be tanking over the course of the next 12 months. And we have the Seattle Seahawks, of course, who I picked to go to playoffs last year. And many people on this show at the time thought I was completely bonkers. But look, let's get into it. And we're going to start with the Rams, because the Rams, as I said, were last year's defending Super Bowl champions. They came into the start of the season, high expectations, got torn up in week one by the Bills. And nothing really ever went right thereafter. But at midpoint of the season, it was very evident the season was over. I suppose they were a team in which they went all in, you know, in terms of trying to get to the promised land, in which they did. They've got the Lombardi in the case. But yes, we've quickly seen in the league that things can unravel very quickly. They've traded away Jalen Ramsey. There's talk of Aaron Donald being healthy, traded away. And Matthew Stafford is a concern coming back off the injury. I'll start with you, Conor, on this one, if you don't mind me. Your thoughts on the Rams, like Sean McVay again has been questioned around whether he's going to be even there in the long term. Like, where do you see this team right now?
This is where you show your mettle as a coach, right? You know, we talk about the best coaches and we correlate the talent that's available to them often with how good they are as a coach. You know, McVay, as we've known, is the wunderkind, the offensive boy genius, as we've seen him over the past couple of years, schemed their way to a Super Bowl, made the right call moving on from Jared Goff. As you say, took a big swing on Matthew Stafford, which was by no means, you know, a guarantee of success, and it absolutely paid off. Obviously, they went all in for that. We remember the infamous general manager Les Snead's t-shirt with the FDM picks slogan on it about, you know, trading away all those number one picks for that shot. Say I'm a big believer in the flags fly forever, you know, having introduced myself and my woebegone Bears fandom over the last 38 years, you know, you hang on to those moments of glory. I you know, in the immortal words of Rupert Pupkin from King of Comedy, better king for a day than schmuck for a lifetime. Like, you'll take a couple of years of rebuilding if you have those warm memories of Lombardi's past in at least recent memory to keep you at low. But we'll see what McVay's mettle is now, you know. I don't know, anyone who's read that long form ESPN article, I think it was in the off season last year it was written, it was probably coming off their Super Bowl season. You know, you see the intensity and you see what the job requires of him and what he's had to put into it. You know, they talk about near migraine like headaches after games because of the level of focus he puts in, you know, hardly any sleep, getting up in the middle of the night to do X's and O's and review film and all of that stuff. You know, this is a sort of obsessive detail that we know of old that Belichick had to put in with the Patriots to build a dynasty. McVay, obviously a coach very much who modeled himself in terms of that love in the game, steeped in the lore of the game, prepared to do, you know, whatever it takes in terms of investment of personal time. And that takes a lot out. And, you know, there was talk about obviously him moving into the broadcast booth. He seemed to have one foot out, came back in. Last season didn't really work out. You can't imagine him going out on a downer, though. He doesn't seem like that kind of guy, having put in everything that he's put in. You know, I think this is the supreme challenge, right, is to build back now. It's not that it's easy to do it when you have the kind of talent that they had and the sacrifices that they had to make to get there and to come back from losing a Super Bowl to win one, you know, with one season removed in between to do that, a feat that so few teams have actually managed over the years. And we'll see how they go this year. And it's going to be really, it's going to be uphill peddling for them, even to get out of that division, given the competition around them. But as I say, I think this is where you'll really see what McVay is made of. And I'm hoping that that backs against the wall brings out the best in him and the talent that they still have available to them. You know, this is not the worst roster in the NFL by any means either.
Not the worst roster, but you have lost quite a few players as well, Colin. Like Leonard Floyd, still available on the open market. I'm surprised he hasn't been picked up. Bobby Wagner was brought in last offseason. Everybody thought he was going to be a solid pick. He's gone back to Seattle. Like, they have quickly released players that have come in. Are you with Connor on this, that it's a case of how good McVay can show himself as a head coach, or is this team kind of in a situation where they'll take their bonuses for another year and try rebuilding and potentially with the number one pick or something in the top five next year? Because they do have a first round pick next year, sorry, just bear in mind that.
At long last. But I'm certainly with Connor on the fact that I think they'd do it all over again if you were to ask Rams fans. And I think if you were to go to Vikings fans, Bills fans, Bengals fans, Falcons fans, Panthers fans, Cardinals, Titans, Chargers, Browns, Lions, Jags, or Texans, all of those teams who don't have Super Bowl rings, any of them would swap places with the Rams. Because ultimately, you play the game to win Super Bowls. And, you know, it's the highs and lows. I mean, if you're living, you know, Florio refers to purple purgatory. The Vikings aren't going to remember the fact that they got to the playoffs last year. What they do remember are the heartbreak seasons where they probably, you know, could have and should have done it. But you don't remember losing in the, you know, the wild card or the divisional round or even the conference championship, really. What people remember are the Super Bowls you win or the very often in my Broncos case, the Super Bowls you get blown out in. So I get why the Rams did what they did. Teams take different approaches to it. I think this is an interesting test of them because, you know, if you kind of look at, say, the way in which the Eagles turned around their roster and what had happened with Carson Wentz, it is a big test for Sean McVay. And, you know, I'd echo a lot of what Connor said in terms of the intensity that he brings. And when you look at, say, the coaches who across sport, right, who have continued to have that longevity and that success, you know, because sometimes that success can go, you can have early success and you go a decade, two decades, they tend to kind of lean more into their coordinators, and they tend to kind of find other interests outside of it. So it would be very interesting to hear that. We know, Brian, when we talk to people in and around the Chiefs, they've talked about how important, Andy Reid, he stresses the importance of family. And he stresses the importance of not being in the building all the time. Probably easy to do that when you got Patrick Mahomes. But I think it will be very interesting for the Rams. I don't think they should move Aaron Donald. He's just such a fundamental piece for them. And truly, when we look back at, you know, defensive tackles, interior guys, I don't know if you find, like, yeah, J.J. Watt was absolutely outstanding, but Aaron Donald is the premier player. And I think as a franchise, you want the banner, but you want him to really be associated with your franchise. There are certain guys that you want them to be forever associated with yours. An interesting one. I will say I think Les Snead may make more moves in post June 1st and over the course of training camp. And who else? You've talked about, you know, guys still on the open market. There's lots of them out there. I wouldn't be surprised if you saw, you know, as we get closer to the season starting, we know the vets don't always want to do training camp. And we will see what happens there. I think they'll have to make some moves, because I don't believe McVay's competitive spirit would allow him to kind of enter a season thinking that, you know, they can't be competitive. He won't want that.
Connor, final question on the Rams. Kind of touched on Aaron Donald there, fantastic player. Do you see a scenario where if the teams didn't play out, which no matter what we're talking about, heads on them being really competitive, come the trade deadline, that he could potentially be traded? Because he was considering retirement, even, you know, he was in a state of flux even earlier on in this offseason. And we've seen in the past where the likes of Von Miller was traded to the Rams, in fact, from the Broncos, and he leads them to a Super Bowl. He's a part of that team that goes and wins it. Aaron Donald strikes me as the kind of player who doesn't want to be hanging around playing with a team that's only had 3 or 4 wins over the course of a season.
No, look, he plays in such an attritional position, even by the standards of football, that, and yet he's such a physical specimen. You know, you think back to not so much the last play of the Super Bowl and him literally ending it as a contest and ending the game, but even the previous one where, you know, he's hand fighting a 300-pound lineman and Samaje Perine comes through the gap and he stops him with one arm, just stops him dead. Like, he's so strong, even by the standards of the sport. He's an absolute freak. You can't see him declining that much, even at age 31, 32, and he's got that you know, world-beating talent that says championship. You know, you remember him holding up the finger, waiting for the ring. He waited long enough for it, and he's not there to just collect the salary. He's there for another championship ring. And so there's two sides to this equation. Obviously, there's what the Rams want and what moving on from Aaron Donald or trading him says about where they're at, and then there's what he wants. You know, there's another Lombardi in him. I mean, you got to believe he believes that, otherwise he would already have retired. And if he doesn't see the chances of doing that in LA, let's see what happens.
Interesting times ahead, and we haven't even touched on Matthew Stafford, whether he'll be fully fit and play the entirety of a season. I'm going to go next on this one. I'm going to throw out a lot of things on the Arizona Cardinals, because Austin Ford comes in as the GM. He then has to deal with Jonathan Gannon as the head coach. There's obviously the conversation on whether they were talking to the Eagles in the background, which shouldn't be done according to league rules. You've got the scenario previously with the owner, when people were removed from the building and they were handed burner phones, in the previous kind of ownership with the GM, Steve Coyne, and he's contacting people he shouldn't be contacting. They've got stipulations in Kyler Murray's contract, which are then removed from the contract. DeAndre Hopkins is clearly unhappy. They've obviously moved on from him this week. And then obviously on the night of the draft, they do a trade with the Texans essentially to secure next year's pick. Strikes me as a team for most people with that. This is the team that are thinking a year ahead. The DeAndre Hopkins release this week, and it for me is even more evident that the fact that they're willing to take the 22.5 salary cap hit now, as opposed to like 11 now and 11 next year, get rid of it now, don't put themselves in a position come the remainder of the offseason where they have cap to sign players. Because if a player becomes free of any magnitude from a team and the Cardinals aren't making a push, it's, you know, if there's cap available, GM fans are asking why. Where if they just take the bump now, they have no money to play with. For me, it just seems like a team that are, I wouldn't say they're off the rails, but certainly looking a year before down the line. And I don't see, my expectations are very low for this team right now. Colin, I'll kick off to you. Would you stand by me on that? Is that a fair reflection of where they're at?
I think so. And I think they are in this kind of weird phase at the moment where last year, to me, it's some people, like, they kind of divided opinion last year. To me, this seemed to be on a slide, so I wasn't particularly surprised by what happened. I would say that, you know, Gannon has come in there. One of the early press conferences didn't exactly go as you would want it to go, but I think it will be, we'll have to see how it goes. To me, all eyes are on next year. They have 6 picks in the top 100 next year. I mean, that is considerable ammo. They're going to look at Kyler Murray. They're going to look what happens. All of the talk, you know, there's been more talk this offseason again around his leadership, around his dedication. You know, things get exaggerated. But even if things get exaggerated, you have to wonder, with that many people asking questions, to me, it is all about 2024, really, and what they happen to do. To me, the Cardinals had done a very smart thing when they moved on from Josh Rosen, and other teams should look at that. I think that should be the model. You draft a QB until you hit on it, and then you got to make the decision on the second contract. But they obviously have given a big, big contract to Kyler Murray. Now, if they're in a position to go up and get one of the young superstar QBs, you've got a QB on a cost-controlled contract. You can move on. I think the decision to take the hit on Hopkins this year is telling. Look, you can't legislate for players. And I have absolutely no doubt that when they cut it to 53 and Jonathan Gannon's team are going to go out and play hard, and it's the NFL, you never know what might happen. But it is hard to say that they're absolutely tooling up to really have a go at this. Equally, I think some people might point to, you know, some of the teams last year, say the Raiders and the Chargers last year, right, who did tool up, but ultimately, especially in the Raiders case, fell totally flat. So it's very difficult to predict this far out. But I can't imagine Cardinals fans are exactly full of optimism heading into June of 2023.
Gannon, last week, DeAndre Hopkins does a podcast in which he outlines a number of the quarterbacks in which he wants to play for, who have all the right attributes, the right attributes. And a part of me felt like he was kind of saying something in the background about his current quarterback.
Yeah. Not listed, Kyler Murray, yeah.
Exactly. I suppose from the GM's perspective, was he putting down a marker this week as well to say, you've done this podcast, we can't have that type of talk outside of the organization, and you're going to go inevitably, we're going to move you now.
Yeah, and as you both said, taking the cap hit all in the 1 year sends out a very strong message. And I was thinking about what you were saying, Colm, in relation to Jonathan Gannon's first presser and how rough that went. And you're thinking that, ironically, is probably the only thing that he has going for him, because at least it echoes where Nick Sirianni was, his former boss at the Eagles, when everybody was down on him after the presser and he turned it around magnificently. But you think also, in a funny way, and I know you were talking about this with Andrew Morgan the other day as well, Brian, you think kind of two paths diverged in a forest on Hard Knocks over the past couple of years. You have everybody high on the lines because of how they came across and what that culture looked like, and how Dan Campbell just leapt through the screen, and you're thinking, God, these players are going to run through walls for this guy. You think back to the previous Hard Knocks, which was the Cardinals, and everybody looking at it going, oof, this looks awful. And it doesn't seem that long ago that the Cardinals were flying at 10-2. Cliff Kingsbury's offense was the next big thing. Kyler was probably the most exciting quarterback to look at in the NFL, even though he looked like he was a John Madden button masher. You never knew quite what was going to happen next. And it's all gone so horribly flat. And they seem to be the consensus. If you're looking around at the offseason rankings, they seem to be the consensus, either the worst or bottom three worst rosters talent-wise in the NFL. You wonder where DeAndre Hopkins ends up next. And interesting and telling that there wasn't much market even for his talents at the price that they had him in, which, you know, harkens back to GM decisions past that I'm sure the Cardinals would like to have back, not least that massive extension for Kyler and the crazy contractual terms, as you say, Brian, that went in there that suggested, even though they were hot on him to the tune of what they were willing to pay him, they had their doubts even at that time. And to echo what you were saying, Colm, you know, was the decision then to move on? You got to feel like they're eyeing up Caleb Williams or similar for next year if they can possibly do that.
Yeah, we're talking about a team that only were one season removed from being 8-0 going into a Thursday night game against the Packers, and then the Packers beat them. But yeah, made the playoffs. There's a wild card game, and within a year, it's all unraveled. The next team was a team that little expected to do much last year. Made the playoffs, got beaten by the 49ers. But people are really high on the Seattle Seahawks this year, in particular after the draft in which they took Witherspoon, the cornerback, with the fifth pick, which was the Broncos' original pick. And then when they did come around to their own pick, arguably took the best wide receiver in the draft in Smith and Jigba. But there's a sense that Pete Carroll's trying to build his team through the defense again and kind of bring back the glory days of the Legion of Doom, Boom, whatever term we want to use. But Geno Smith is kind of re-energizing, you know, the quarterback coach who was believed to be the guy behind that has moved on now. He's gone to the Bucs as the new offensive coordinator. So, Colm, are you high on the Seahawks? I know we're in very middle stage of the offseason, so there's still a lot to come yet, but do you see them as a team that could potentially be challenging the 49ers come the new season?
I would imagine so. I mean, they have to deal with raised expectations. As I said, last year, nobody outside of yourself and a select few others gave them a prayer. And it's very easy to have bulletin board material in that respect. Everybody doubts us, build a siege mentality. Pete Carroll, you know, the old dog for the long road, and he knew what to do with his players. And they were magnificent last year, you would have to say. Pete will, you know, he'll know how to, prepare them. I think they have drafted well. Certainly positionally, what they're trying to do makes an awful lot of sense, you would have to say. When you look at the receiving trio now, it is impressive. Obviously, they've got a good running back core as well. And Witherspoon is exactly the sort of physical cornerback that Pete loves and that they were missing. So I think he is looking to kind of bring that physicality back, that Legion of Boom that, you know, was so dominant for so long. And the fact that Bobby Wagner has kind of come back in, Draymond Jones, I think is an excellent pickup for them. It's just there's an awful lot of aggression there. And I think that's what nobody's going to enjoy playing the Seahawks. Whether that's, you know, having to travel to Seattle, and we know how loud it is up there, or when they arrive in town, because they're going to be in your face. They run hard, they play hard. And I think that they will be competing with the 49ers for this division. There's still a long way to go until it even starts. But to me, they've had a solid offseason.
Connor, last offseason, the draft, Charles Cross, offensive line, first round, Lucas, third round, offensive line, Woolen in the secondary, Kobe Bryant in the secondary, Kenneth Walker, the running back, all rookie class, all contributed immediately. And Snyder obviously does the deal with the Broncos to send Russell Wilson off, and at the time people were kind of questioning if he's lost his mind. But when you see the results of what they've had last year, and you go into this draft, there's so much confidence around the players in which they've selected so far. But yeah, he doesn't seem to get a lot of exposure as potentially one of the GMs within the league that should be high up there, for potentially even, you know, forget GM of the year or anything like that, but a magnificent job over the course of the last 12 months.
Yeah, as you say, I suppose everybody's competing for second place behind Howie Roseman these days, much to their chagrin, but they had an incredible draft class last year, you know, probably headed by Tariq Woolen. Might have been Kenneth Walker at the top of that list if he hadn't gotten injured during the season. Your key question here is sustainability, I think, on two fronts. Firstly, What level of player are we going to see from Geno this year? Given the type of player he is, you don't expect, or I wouldn't expect, that there'll be much of a drop-off there. It, you know, we've obviously a very small sample of work ultimately to look at from Geno, you know, which is crazy considering how long he's been in the league. It's not so much that he wasn't the guy, it's that he never had the chance to prove he was the guy until last season and stamped his card. That to me looks absolutely repeatable this year. Will they hit with the draft picks to the same extent they did last year? Very hard to get that level of consistency from year to year because it is such a lottery, but they look to have picked really well. And they had those two first rounders, Witherspoon and Smith and Jigba, look to be perfect fits in what Carroll is trying to do on both sides of the ball. You're also back with this AFC-NFC matchup at the moment. AFC, you've just got to get through such a murderer's row even to get to the Super Bowl. I mean, I ultimately was wrong in this last year when I was thinking about predictions at around about this point in 2022. I would have thought champion is definitely going to come from the NFC because it's such a slog to get through on the other side. I was high on the 49ers or the Eagles, marginally tipped the 49ers, turned out to be wrong there. But I kind of have a similar feeling this year that, you know, if you're where the Seahawks are right now, your path to a Super Bowl is a lot easier than if you were, say, the Bengals, Bills, or even Aaron Rodgers' new team, the Jets, for all the people are high on them. Like, it's a really tough road to navigate that. It's kind of like Ireland's side of the draw in the Rugby World Cup. You'd much rather be on the other side where you only have to beat one of the real, real contenders. You know, your path to the Super Bowl on the NFC probably lies through the Eagles, whether you like it or not, this time around. But if I'm Pete Carroll, if I'm the Seahawks, I like where I'm sitting right now. I like the hand that I'm playing with them. People will be an awful lot higher on them this year, and as you were right to be last year, Brian, than they were this time a year ago.
Again, I think you both touched on there. The expectations have risen now. People will expect to see this team kind of push on and potentially be challenging. And I suppose put it up to the 49ers, and we're going to come to them now. Obviously, gone to the championship game, and unfortunately, the championship game really didn't materialize into the game we were all hoping to see because of the injuries that were sustained by the quarterbacks. I just want to make a point on the quarterbacks. I'm struggling to understand the scenario that's there at the moment, because you got Trey Lance, and we really haven't seen a proper production from him, play, because obviously the injury last year so early on in the season. And then you've got Purdy comes in and does I suppose fits into an offense that Kyle Shanahan wants to play, and yet this offseason they bring in Sam Darnold, and there's people out there that feel Sam Darnold might be the one that actually starts week one, because he again is another quarterback that fits into the scheme. And it's more so about Shanahan's scheme than the quarterback. Who's the odd man out here? Because no matter what happens, I'd imagine Sam Darnold's being brought in to be the backup. Trey Lance still there. Brock Purdy now, the suggestion is he will be ready come week one. Connor, I'll flip it to you, sir. What's your thoughts on this quarterback scenario conundrum that they're dealing with?
Is this a quarterback-proof offense at the end of the day? I mean, if you plug anyone halfway competent in there, you have the feeling they'd be rolling, given, you know, the talent that's around them. I mean, you watched Brock at times last season, and, you know, we're judging on six games, and he put together six great games, in fairness to him. But there were times during that when you were going, oh, don't do that. You know, I haven't looked at the count of turnover-worthy plays, that beloved advanced metric that pops up from time to time, but you bet it was pretty high. What actually counts as a turnover-worthy play when you're throwing to the likes of George Kittle, or, you know, you've got Debo Samuel or Brandon Ayuk going up for the ball, or you can ditch one off short to Christian McCaffrey and, you know, he adds on 15 yards after contact, pads out your stats for you. I was thinking about this earlier. I want to throw this one out there. If Kirk Cousins is a starting quarterback for the 49ers, I'm all in on them winning the Super Bowl. Like, the level of what's required in under center in San Francisco, to me, to make them contenders, is a lot lower than it is at other teams because of the offense that Shanahan has designed and because of what they have on the other side of the ball. And they've had terrible luck. I mean, when the NFL owners agree to a rule change to prevent something happening to somebody else after it happened to you, I think you're entitled to feel hard done by, as they were in the championship game last year. And as we were as fans, because you were robbed of what could have been an absolute knockout blow of an NFC championship game and ultimately turned out to be a non-event.
Colin, we just found the first snippet that we can remove from this episode, declaring Kirk Cousins and the 49ers to the Super Bowl by Connor. Javon Hargrave comes in from the Eagles, major acquisition in free agency. And essentially, it looked like they went and, what can we do to, I suppose, make the Eagles worse? We bring in arguably one of their best players. And a lot of 49ers fans, I had John Chapman on from 49ers Rush podcast in California a couple of weeks back, and he said, when we went to the free agents, they thought, was the offense is so good, and Connor's touched on yards after catching their top five for that. He felt they would still go after some offensive players in particular and be aggressive, and yet they go out on the opening night of free agency, be aggressive on the other side of the ball in a defense that's arguably one of the best in the league. It's hard to see how they won't be back challenging for at least the championship game, and predominantly it would all come through the defense, whilst they still have a quarterback situation there.
Yeah, I think there are a couple of factors to consider, though. Remember now, DeMeco Ryans has moved on. And so that is a huge factor that perhaps we are not really, hasn't been discussed that much, which is interesting because, you know, obviously Salah moved on and there were questions then And then Jack O'Ryan's comes in and he probably was even better. Now they have Steve Wilks in, who did such a phenomenal job as head coach, and it will be interesting to see how they get on there. What you would say to me, I suppose, is when you look at the starters, the 49ers are the best in the league, potentially, you know, when you go right across the board. I mean, the Chiefs may be the only ones who can really match up to them in terms, because they have Patrick Mahomes. But the issue is the depth. And I go back to the, you know, we obviously focus on the quarterback, right? But the reason the Eagles were so successful last year was the depth and the fact that they could rotate guys in and out. And the 49ers have had this injury bug for quite some time. If they can move past that, then it's absolutely, for me, it's between them and the Eagles for the NFC crown as it stands at the moment. But we know that there will be injuries of some sort or another, and what will it look like? Last year was particularly cruel on the 49ers, so it's difficult to say. They obviously have a genius in Kyle Shanahan at the head coach position. In terms of the quarterback one, and this is where I think it could be interesting. So reports out today that Trey Lance was taking all first team reps. So maybe that speculation around Sam Darnold was misplaced so far, right? Also reports today that Brock Purdy is throwing and is ahead of schedule, which apparently they are, quote, delighted by. So to me, I think ultimately this is the two it'll come down to. I think, and I know when I had Jared Bailey on, we discussed this. I believe that they went with Trey Lance for a reason, because although Connor is right that the offense is almost, you know, quarterback proof, Shanahan knows and is that much of a genius that he, I think, wants to take it to the next level. And yes, you can do that with a Kirk Cousins or a Brock Purdy, but ultimately in this league now, you need a guy who can use his legs. And I keep going back to it. The Chiefs do not win the Super Bowl last year if Patrick Mahomes, who happens to be an amazing pocket passer, but if he can't use his legs. So to me, I think that's ultimately why.
Or leg, know, as it was last year, Colin. Apparently, yeah. Patrick Mahomes doesn't even need both of them.
Doesn't need both of them. Just the one will do. But that's where I think it's going to be very interesting to see what way it plays out. And maybe it's Lance himself that they don't have, that it hasn't worked out. We don't know what's going on behind the scenes. I just feel he hasn't gotten the opportunity to show it on the field, because he got, like, it was so stop start in that first year. And they went with Garoppolo initially. He starts last year. He plays in a monsoon. Connor would have enjoyed that win. But then very early in the second game, he gets injured. So I just don't think we have seen it. And I think, my goodness, if Shanahan gets his hands on a QB who can throw the ball and, you know, use his legs, then it could absolutely be next level. And I really don't know how any NFL defense is going to be able to deal with that.
Connor, last question on the Niners. One Super Bowl loss, two championship game in a row, essentially losing both games, albeit the last one was a bit of a farce in the end. When I interviewed the Niners podcast a couple of weeks ago, they kind of joked, and Colin said earlier on about the amount of teams that would love to have the Rams scenario where they've won the Super Bowl. And I asked them the question, would you swap all these consistent years of winning playoff games and get close to the final, to the Super Bowl, and have one big season where you win the Super Bowl and you go away for 2 or 3 years? And he said he'd take that. Like, is John Lynch going to be under pressure at some stage? Because can't keep having these seasons and not get to where you need to be for what the expectation is.
Well, yes, ultimately, because it's the 49ers, right? And there's different expectations there to what a lot of other franchises have. Look, it's a really interesting argument, and you could probably devote a whole podcast to this. You know, you look at where the Packers are with 30 years of Hall of Fame level quarterback play, and you win two Super Bowls. The same number that the Bucs won over a boom and bust cycle where there was years of virtual irrelevance. it's so difficult to win them. And I think the value that we place on a Lombardi trophy has been in some ways skewed horribly by how ridiculous the Patriots were and how they managed against all odds and against the rules that are there to ensure parity for understandable reasons in the NFL. How they managed to do that has almost devalued what it is to win one Super Bowl and how difficult it is to do. And the 49ers are probably the poster children for that with the roster that they have, how good they've been consistently for so long. You know, you look back even at that the Super Bowl they lost to the Chiefs, comes down to one play, and all that's in the difference is Patrick Mahomes. Because Patrick Mahomes can make that throw to Tyreek Hill under ridiculous pressure, you know, getting beaten up all day long and chased around and running for his life. He makes that throw on third and forever. Garoppolo has a similar one to get the 49ers back in the game, and he overthrows his receiver and it's game over. And it's just like that. Last year, Brock Purdy has that free contact with the helmet of the rusher. I can't even remember who it was. He dragged him and he's out of the game, and their whole season falls apart on that, as they're already down to the third string quarterback. And Colin's quite right, you know, for all that we talk about the strength of their starting 22 on both sides of the ball, it's resilience and it's a bit of luck with injuries that's probably kept them back. They're so close, but that doesn't necessarily count for anything. You know, you add up all those second places and it doesn't add up to a first. You know, it's I wouldn't quite compare the 49ers to the Mayo footballers, but it's tough.
49ers and Mayo footballers is an interesting comparison. Look, most divisions, when we make our picks come August and September every year, we have very various different picks and selections, wild cards and all the rest. But I have a funny feeling come September that I think we might be aligned in terms of who we are picking to win the NFC West. But for now, that is our NFC West review on the Irish NFL Show. Thanks to Colm and thanks to Connor. For now, join us for the next episode.